work.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the afternoon November 22nd session of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll?
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Hales.
Here. Thanks, everybody. We have a time-certain item. We're going to take that first, and then we're going to return to unfinished items from this morning's session. So we will do the time-certain item number 1315 first. And would you please read that item?
Item 1315, appeal of LRS Architects, Inc. against Design Commission's decision to approve with conditions, specifically C.1 and C.2, corner building element, a new one-quarter block, 12-story residential building located at Northwest 14th Avenue and Northwest Raleigh Street.
Thank you. This is a quasi-judicial land use hearing, so I will first have our city attorney make some procedural announcements, and then I'll ask for disclosures from the council.
Okay. This is an on-the-record hearing. This means you must limit your testimony to material and issues in the record. We will begin with a staff report by the Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, City Council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and will have 10 minutes to present his or her case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go next. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak with Council. The principal opponent will have 15 minutes to address City Council and rebut the appellant's presentation. If there is no principal opponent, the Council will move directly to testimony from persons who oppose the appeal after supporters of the appeal conclude their testimony. Again, after the principal opponent, the council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal. Again, each person will have 3 minutes. Finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of the opponents of the appeal. The council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is a tentative vote, the council will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If the council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter before the council.
Okay.
All right. Just one little bit more. Sorry.
Several
guidelines for those who will be addressing council today. This is an evidentiary record again. This is an on-the-record hearing. Excuse me. The evidentiary record is closed. Again, this is an on-the-record hearing. The hearing is to decide only if the Design Commission made the correct decision based on the evidence that was presented it. This means you must limit your marks to arguments based on the record compiled by the Design Commission. You may refer to evidence that was previously submitted to the Design Commission. You may not submit new evidence that was not submitted to the Design Commission. If your argument includes new evidence or issues, you may be interrupted and reminded that you must limit your testimony to the record. The council will not consider information, and it will be rejected in the City Council's final decision. If you believe a person who addressed City Council today improperly presented new evidence or presented a legal argument that relies on evidence that is not in the record, you may object to that argument. Finally, under state law, only issues that were raised before the Design Commission may be raised in the appeal to City Council. If you believe another person has raised issues today that were not raised before the Design Commission, you may object to Council's consideration of the issue. Lastly, the applicant must identify constitutional challenges to the conditions of approval. Additionally, if the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to the proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow Council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right, first of all, we need to ask if there are any members of the council that need to declare a potential conflict of interest on this matter.
Well, I would just state that the Portland Housing Bureau, which I oversee, is a major investor in this project, but I haven't met with anybody about this particular design issue or appeal.
Okay. I have none.
All right, and are there any ex parte contacts to declare information gathered outside the hearing or visits to the site to discuss or put into the record? Okay, none of us have, other than Commissioner Saltzman's declaration about the bureau he supervises, there are no conflicts of interest or ex parte contacts. So let's proceed then into the hearing with staff report. Good afternoon. I think it's on.
Okay. Good afternoon, yep. Mayor, council members. My name is Grace Jeffries. I am BDS staff. I am the design and historic review team. And
if you want, you can slide that whole box a little closer to you.
Oh, this.
Yeah. There you go.
I'll give you a little bit of background about the site. It's a quarter block site, 10,000 square feet. It was an existing surface parking lot. It's located at the intersection of Northwest 14th and Northwest Raleigh. It's located in the Central City Plan District and the River District Subdistrict and the North Pearl Subarea. The relevant approval criteria are the Central City Fundamental and the River District Design Guidelines. Some images of the context. This is a view looking at the southwest corner of the site from Northwest 14th. The red brick building to the right is the Ramona. The one-story building to the left is to be replaced soon with a three-quarter block mixed-use development called the Broadstone Reveal. This is a view looking at the southwest corner of the site from Northwest Raleigh. To the right's the Ramona, and beyond is the Abigail, both of which contain affordable housing. So to provide some context on the small site plan, the red indicates the proposed site. The yellow indicates the location of the building in the photo. So across the street to the south is the Ramona. It's a six-story brick affordable housing project built in 2008 for Pearl Family Housing. One block to the east lies the Abigail, a six-story brick and metal panel affordable housing project built for Bridge Housing in 2013. One block to the southeast lies the Parker, a six-story brick multifamily housing project built in 2012. And diagonally across the intersection will soon be the recently approved seven-story brick and metal-clad mixed-use proposal, the Broadstone Reveal. These six to seven-story brick and metal-clad buildings create the emerging urban warehouse context that this proposal will reside in. So the zoning for this site is EXD, which is the central employment zone with the design overlay. The base floor area ratio is 4:1. Additional FAR can be earned through bonuses and transfers. The base height is 100 feet, and unlimited height is possible through design review. This is the design review proposal. It's a 12-story building. It contains 93 affordable units. There's a retail space on the corner, 15 auto parking, and one loading space on the ground floor. The proposed height is 129 feet, 8 inches to the top of the parapet. There's 100 feet allowed, so the 29 feet, 8 inches above that is a request through modification review. The FAR proposed is 10.52 to 1. There's a 4:1 FAR allowed on the site. They've earned a 5:1 bonus. And they are doing a historic resource transfer for the remaining 1.52 to 1 FAR. These are exceptional requests beyond the base zoning. Five additional reviews were requested along with that design review, four modifications and an exception to Oreo window standards. So the review criteria for those for modifications are twofold. The first is the proposal will better meet the design guidelines, and the second is that the proposal is consistent with the purpose of the standard. For exceptions, the criteria is that the proposal will meet the design guidelines. So for the first modification, which is to the height, at the DARs, the design advice request hearings, the applicant was advised that for this large modification, it would be critical to demonstrate how the proposal better meets the design guidelines, especially those related to the context and coherency. The second modification is to allow reduced size for four of the parking spaces. The third modification is to allow reduced spacing of the wall-mounted bike racks. The fourth modification is to allow a reduced size for the loading space. And the exception to Oreo window standards, though a 12-foot maximum width is allowed for Oreo windows, the proposal includes a 29-foot, 11.5-inch wide Oreo window on Northwest 14th and a 31-foot, 4-inch wide Oreo window on Northwest Raleigh.
I'm sorry, could you pause for just a second and define what an Oreo window is?
So it's a window projection over the right-of-way.
And is a window like that added for aesthetic reasons, or does it actually increase the square footage of the unit?
I think in this case it does a very slight increase in square footage, but I think it was done for aesthetic reasons in this part. You can speak to the applicant.
What's the purpose of having a limit on the length of oriel windows?
I think these are a little back up here on that.
I should have asked you ahead of time, but I didn't think of it before.
Yeah, I could help with that. Tim Herron, Bureau of Development Services. The limitations on Oreos projecting into right-of-way came out of an agreement with BDS and the Portland Bureau of Transportation to kind of limit that amount of privatized floor area above public space. And so the power given to the Design Commission in any case where an Oreo projects wider than 12 feet is discretion, and whether or not that width has been mitigated enough through other aspects of the design.
Thank you.
And so just in practical terms, Tim, why is it a matter of public concern?
Because it's private space above public right-of-way. So it affects shadowing over right-of-way. It can affect volume of building mass over right-of-way. A more literal extreme example are sky bridges, where it triggers
Just don't say that in front of the mayor.
Yeah.
Next thing, you're going to be talking about drive-throughs, and he's going to break out and he's going to completely lose it. But
well, I use that as obviously the extreme example of where we do regulate projections over the right-of-way. Some are more nominal, like smaller balconies that are open air, canopies into the right-of-way for rain protection.
But so I'm asking this because I'm learning, not because I'm arguing the point. But I mean, the last time I was in San Francisco, it seemed like part of the whole design motif of the city is these punched out areas that, quote unquote, intrude into public spaces. And I, depending on their height and their function, I didn't necessarily view that as an intrusion into public spaces. So,
yeah, and again, just to be clear, the design in this particular case, the issue really wasn't about whether a design commission wouldn't approve an oriel window. It was more about how it was composed and how it inhabits that right-of-way space. We regularly approve oriel window projections at different types or sizes through design review that go beyond the standard. But some of that is just creating that nexus to the design guidelines and seeing if it's an appropriate architectural response, as well as one private building area that extends over the right-of-way.
So is it fair to say that in this particular area of our review, we're talking about subjective judgments about aesthetics and design and things like that, as opposed to other more objective factors?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate the pause for definitional clarity.
So in terms of the process, there were three voluntary reviews held, design advice requests, April 7th, May 12th, and June 6th. At all three of those, there was feedback regarding concerns with the ground floor design, the materials, the coherency, and the contextual response. The design required design review, as well as the optional reviews, were submitted on September 22nd, and the appeals October 21st, 2016. This is a couple of illustrations just to show how the project did progress through the process. Some of the concerns expressed by the commission at the DAR meetings were addressed somewhat in the design review proposal. The design and program at the ground level evolved to better activate the street frontages than the initial schemes. While typical quarter block proposals in the central city typically have greater ground floor activation than this proposal does, the applicant felt that this amount of parking was critical to their particular affordable housing program. Above the ground, the commission still had concerns about the contextual response and the response to the coherency guidelines, especially at the important and prominent corner element, and in particular, the oversized rotated oriel windows. The commission encouraged the applicant to relate to the existing and newly emerging urban warehouse context of the Ramona, the Abigail, and the Broadstone reveal across the street, rather than to the freeway overpasses as described in their narrative. Above changes illustrate the design evolution between the voluntary DARs and the required design review. There are some clear changes between the early, the first and the second DAR. However, the changes later on are less obvious. So the design review approval was approved for a Type 3 design review with modifications and exception. Conditions of approval A through I were added so the proposal could meet the applicable approval criteria. In particular, conditions of approval C1 and C2 were added so the proposal would meet the guidelines related to coherency and contextual response, A4, A5, A51, A511, C4, and C5. The conditions of approval C1 and C2 are being appealed. These are the 7 relevant design guidelines, including the commentary specific to the issues. I won't read through those, but you have a copy of my PowerPoint. So the City Council alternatives include: deny the appeal and uphold the Design Commission's decision to approve with conditions the requested Northwest and 14th Raleigh design review with modification and exception reviews, or deny the appeal and uphold the Commission's decision with modified conditions and findings to the requested Northwest 14th and Raleigh design review with modification and exception reviews. But because this is an on-the-record case, any modifications must be based on evidence that has already been contained in the record for this land use review. Third option is to grant the appeal to remove the conditions of approval, C1 and C2, of the Design Commission's decision to approve with conditions the requested 14th and Raleigh design review with modifications and exception reviews. If, however, the Council amends any of the Design Commission's conditions of approval, the Council are advised to ask the appellant to sign a time extension today, today's hearing. So are there any questions for me?
Any particular, not so much a question as maybe a little illumination. Were these issues at all ventilated in the 3 design advice request discussions, or did the issue that's now under appeal only emerge later in the process?
No, these issues were from the very beginning. And the proposal slowly made changes along the way, but the commission noted pretty strong concern very early on that they, especially contextually, didn't feel that the proposal was fitting in as well as it could to meet the applicable design guidelines.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much. Stand by. We'll see if we need you later in the process, and we'll move on then to the statement from the appellant. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So get your PowerPoint there activated.
So do they have this in front of them?
There we go. Okay.
All right. I'm going to start. Good afternoon. I'm Sarah Stevenson. I'm Executive Director of Innovative Housing. Thank you for your time today. We are here to appeal 2 conditions imposed by Design Commission on a 93-unit affordable housing project that you've heard we're developing in the Pearl neighborhood. I'd like to preface our presentation by recognizing the important role that Design Commission and design standards play in our city. As a longtime developer in Portland, we know the value that they add to our city's landscape, and we're familiar with the process that is required to obtain design approval. Indeed, we began working with Design Commission in February in an effort to use the new Type 2X design review process that was made available to affordable housing. We incorporated many design changes as a result of the guidance that they gave us at the 2 different design advice hearings. We were simultaneously working with the Pearl District Neighborhood Association's Planning Committee. We met with them 3 times and received some very good input about the project that resulted in substantive changes to the building's design. I believe we all, Design Commission, the Pearl District Neighborhood Association, and IHI and our design team, worked together in good faith to make this project the best that it could be, with positive results. In August, we received the Pearl District Neighborhood Association's support for our design. We've given you a copy of the letter that they wrote supporting our design as well as this appeal. In September, Design Commission also approved the project, but with conditions. We agreed to all but two of their requested changes. The two elements about which we disagree come down to a subjective difference of opinion regarding design aesthetics. We prefer a building with a strong differentiated corner and alternating bays, and I say bays, they say orioles, we're talking about the same thing, that interact with the multiple levels of the nearby bridge and freeways. Design Commission would like us to combine the bays into one large element and wrap the same exterior pattern around the entire building. We have agreement that these various elements meet applicable design standards, but we differ about where they appear on the building. Is it clear in what you're seeing which drawing we proposed versus which one comes with conditions?
It's on this, too. Yeah.
Excellent.
Thanks for blowing it up.
Excellent. So design matters, and we want to build the best building that we can. But just as important to us right now is budget. We are asking you to allow us to proceed with our design because moving the bays to the top of the building alters our structural plans and costs more to construct. Portland is in the midst of an affordable housing crisis. This project will create 93 units of affordable housing. 40 of those will have project-based rental subsidy and be set aside for families experiencing homelessness. These families need housing now. Redesigning the exterior of the building and its structural plans to accommodate the changes the Design Commission has requested will take additional time and money. We've spoken to the Portland Housing Bureau about this. They do not have additional funds for us. We are already struggling to contain costs in the current construction market. Pricing at our 50% DD set came in at $1.35 million over budget. So we're in the process right now of cutting out everything that isn't essential. We put dishwashers and all common area furnishings and outdoor furnishings on the add-back list last week. That means we've cut them out of the budget, and we only get them back if we have enough contingency at the end of the project to afford them. In this pricing environment, we expect to see further cost increases when we go out to bid with a full permit set. We're very good at managing complicated budgets, but the current construction market is very challenging, even for very experienced developers like IHI. This is why we cannot afford any more design changes that increase cost. We've made several of them early on, including increasing the size of the lobby, increasing storefront glass, and adding commercial space. We estimate that the changes we made in response to requests from the Design Commission, planning staff, and the Neighborhood Association resulted in an additional $300,000 of cost to the project. They were good changes, and we are glad we made them. But at this point, the project is not able to absorb any more costs related to design. Redesigning to meet Design Commission's conditions will add $160,000 in known costs to our budget. We just don't have it. What we have is a design that has the support of the Neighborhood Association, honors the site's industrial and cultural history in both its design and materials, demonstrates a diversity of design and creative energy that will speak to our new residents and create a welcoming space for them to call home, strongly relates to its current surroundings without mirroring the design of adjacent affordable housing, and is desperately needed by low-income and homeless families struggling to house their children. Please help us achieve finality on design so we can continue the hard work of cutting costs and getting this project built.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Alex Salazar. I'm principal of Salazar Architect, a small Portland-based MWESB-certified firm specialized in the design of affordable housing. We mostly work with low-income communities of color. Besides practice, I also occasionally teach architectural design at Portland State University, and I previously taught at the University of Oregon. What I love about affordable housing is that residents come from diverse backgrounds. As in my own family, they often have one or two immigrant parents who bring with them a diversity of design sensibilities. In all these communities, there are artistic traditions in architecture, painting, and textiles that use repetitive patterns and bright colors and strong forms. Similarly, what is fascinating about the Pearl District's long history is that there's immigrants who settled near the rail yards, not just Europeans, but African Americans, Chinese, and Japanese workers and families. Our two-bay corner design is a nod to this more diverse history of the Pearl. We want to use strong forms to create a sense of excitement and inspiration in the urban streetscape as a way to symbolically connect families of affordable housing to the history of the Pearl. This theme runs through the interior design of our project and how we're thinking about bringing artwork into the lobby and community areas. I lived near the site up until about a year ago. Formalistically, the building is in response to the urban context. This edge of the Pearl has many middle-class buildings and is surrounded by the 405 freeway, which creates a lot of shadows and noise that makes the area feel marginal and disconnected from the rest of the Pearl. The two bays pick up on the lines of the freeway and two levels of the Fremont Bridge, but they also lower the bay to a pedestrian level where it can be seen and also pick up on the surrounding context. For the bays to work, we kept the cladding at the corner as one color. This allows the bay to be more distinctive and different. And much of the energy and dynamism of the building is because the double bays create movement and a sense of connection to the built structures that surround it. And so from our team's point of view, having two bays is the central feature of the design. It responds to the urban context, day or night, while symbolically connecting folks living in affordable housing to the Pearl District's more diverse history. Thank you.
Can I ask you a question? I get the difference in the bays. I guess the other thing that I note in the two pictures is under the Design Commission's conditions, the window treatment below the bays is consistent with the other window treatment, and under your proposal, it doesn't have the L, it doesn't have the two-tone. What's
correct?
I would just be interested as the designer as mm-hmm. to why you made the decision to have just a monochromatic color under the bays as opposed to the two tones that are adjacent.
Sure. I mean, the building really, there's three parts to the massing. There's the massing that faces 14th Street. There's the corner with the rotated bays. And then there's the massing that faces south on Raleigh. And at the corner, in order to have the bays be more distinctive, we kept the cladding, which is all metal, whether it's the dark color or the light color, to be monotone so that the bays themselves feel more strong and punchy, to be honest. That
makes sense. And the other question I had for you is two of the four sides of this building don't have windows. That's not before us right now, but why did you make that judgment? Does it have something to do with what you expect that is going to follow in terms of development? And that
yeah, block? That's at the property line. So we're built out the full quarter block. So buildings will eventually be built up right next to our building.
Yeah. There's either one story or parking lot on the other quarter blocks.
I'm sorry?
What's occupying the other portion of the block at this point?
Go ahead.
One side is a vacant lot, and the other is a one-story industrial one.
One and a half story
industrial building.
So you would expect projects with similar mass and FAR to be built on the remaining
We would.
Portions.
One of the reasons I raised that is that in the end game on Bud Clark Commons, we got a criticism that there were no windows on the north and south, on the north side of the building that you saw when you came off the Broadway Bridge.
Right.
And that was just part of the design. So we ended up putting LEDs disguised as windows on that side. So it just created uniformity, but they're
right.
not actually windows.
Right.
But
we did bring around, and that was a kind of part of the question and answers on our formal DR process, and we brought the same kind of metal panel system and trim work so that it has some texture and stronger feeling to those faces that will eventually be covered up, but we're spending money to try to make it look nice in the short term.
So could you put the clock back to 3 minutes, please?
Used up some of your time in discussion, so keep
I was
going.
Keeping track myself. I'm Trish Nixon with LRS Architects. Let me see if I can advance slides and talk at the same time. LRS and Salazar Architect have worked together using an integrated design approach to provide IHI with a vibrant building design that will be a source of pride for both the neighbors and the residents. The feedback we have received from the Design Review Commission, as well as the neighborhood and the planning staff, have really contributed to this overall success of the design as presented to the Design Review Commission on September 22nd. As Sarah mentioned, we had intended originally to utilize the new streamlined Type 2X process when we started, but as we moved through this process, it became clear that there were some differences of opinion in some of the stronger elements of our design that we felt were important to keep. Because of that, we went ahead and had a second DAR and then a separate work session with three of the commissioners, hoping we could come to an agreement on the design direction. Since the differences remained, we elected to go ahead and proceed with a Type 3 design review process. As Sarah also mentioned, we did have three additional meetings with the Pearl District Neighborhood Association, and we have the full support. Their full support is the building as designed. I think each of you were given a letter that we just received from them a couple of days ago with that support. During the final hearing, design review staff presented a modified version of our design that was not created or approved by the architects or the owner. This action is what led directly to the conditions we are appealing. The project has come a long way. Project has come a long way from where we started, and the design team has made many modifications requested by Design Commission. In the slide in front of you, what you see on the left is the design as we started with, and these are what Grace showed you, what we started with, and then on the right is the design as we submitted it to design review. Just to go through briefly some of the changes that were incorporated, we made revisions to the ground floor to provide a significant amount of active use along both 14th and Raleigh. This included a large commercial space on the corner, a much more generous lobby, and a bike lobby. We calmed the pattern on the building by softening the contrast in color between the silver and gray panels and concentrating the orange and cayenne colors to the slot and the corner bays. We modified the window colors to work more closely with the adjacent metal panels and added larger window trim elements to increase articulation. We added an additional rib in the metal siding to add rigidity to the panels. We moved the brick base to each end, dropping the windowsill in order to allow for more expensive glass storefront. We added a larger canopy at the storefront, and we changed the rear facades of the building, as Alex mentioned, to a pattern that matches the street facades. We have agreed to incorporate all conditions with the exception of the changes to the corner that we are appealing to you today. While we feel that many of the requested changes have made for a stronger project, they have also come at a cost to what is already a very tight budget. Accepting this final change will not only reduce the vibrancy of the design, it will require redesign work, costing the project more money and time, as well as an increase in construction cost.
Should we stop because we're at our 10 minutes?
No, go ahead and wrap up.
Okay.
We interrupted you enough that I'll be...
All right, I was just going to conclude by saying thank you for your time and your consideration of all of the issues that are involved in our appeal. As you've heard, this comes down to a difference of opinion about two design choices. One of the options presents a real increase in cost to an affordable housing development that is struggling to stay on budget. We're appealing to you, our city council, to ask that you prioritize affordable housing over aesthetic nuance and let us move forward with a project that will provide crucial affordable housing for families who need it in Portland today. Please approve our design without the additional conditions imposed by Design Commission. Thank you.
Thank you. Question I have, others may have questions as well, but I understand the I understand your point about the impact of requiring now more design work. That costs money. I get that. But is the, aside from the design cost and the process cost or time value cost, is the Design Commission's condition of a single aureole segment inherently more expensive from a construction standpoint than two? I would think that two would be more expensive, but
it shifts the weight-bearing load of the building, so it requires a different structural, and we've been told by our contractor that it does increase construction costs.
Okay. Even though you have to do that in effect twice in the design as you've proposed it.
For some reason, when we showed them the new plans, or not the plans, but the new picture. And we got our structural engineer's analysis of what the structure changes would be. When they gave those to the contractor said this comes at a price tag of X. And
those two images that we just seen, they're exactly the same building envelope and height. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. The height? Yeah.
It's really interesting because I think that your design makes it look less tall, whereas the Design Commission's kind of makes it look skinnier and taller.
Okay, other questions? Thank you very much.
We may have
questions later, but that's a good presentation. Thank you. Are there individuals here to support the appeal?
We have two individuals signed up, Crystal Stinson and Julie Garner.
Please come on up. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi. So I'm Crystal Stinson, and I'm here on behalf of IHI, in a sense. My name is Crystal, and I moved to an IHI building back in 2007. I had decided to leave a domestic violence relationship that I was in for many years as a teenager. I was living in my new apartment for about 30 days when I was in a pretty severe auto accident where my car was totaled. I think less than 3 months later, my boss passed away, and I lost my job because the business went under. In January 2008, less than 6 months after I had moved into the IHI building, I was at a loss. I had no job, no car, no direction. I went to management, who referred me to the resident services coordinator on site at our low-income apartment housing. And she directed me to Emma. My intention was to give my 30-day notice. I had a good rental history, and I didn't want that to go down the drain. Emma listened to me that day. She helped me find employment and provided me with services to get my rent paid. She also talked me into going and getting my GED, which IHI paid the $100 to get the testing done at Mount Hood Community College. That was in 2009, and I'm proud to say that in 2015, I graduated with an associate's in business management from that same college. I became a mother in 2012. I started using the other services that IHI provides, such as Harvest Share, which is a thing that you do with the residents and other people in the community where you can get free food once a month. My child gets jackets every winter. They provide school supplies and backpacks for all the children on site. I've also participated in other programs with them that directly impacted my life. Last year, I was made aware of a management opportunity at the complex I reside in, and that management opportunity was provided by IPM, the management company at IHI's, one of IHI's buildings. I started a job as a part-time manager there, and I've been working there since early last year. I get to see and work with people every single day that come in and are in need of housing. I get to see that individuals are not just in need, they are desperate. And we very rarely have any openings because of the massive rent increase going on right now in Oregon. Without IHI, I can tell you that I would not be standing in front of you today. I can tell you that I've lived in many apartment communities, and I just haven't ever had the opportunity that they gave me. I really am here to stand before you and ask you that you allow the housing project proposed by IHI to move forward. They've done great things for me, and I currently reside and work in the same apartment that I moved in back in 07. So it's definitely something that I feel has been a benefit in my life and for my families, and I'd like that opportunity to be available to others.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Thank you. Welcome.
My name is Julie Garver. I'm the Housing Development Coordinator for Innovative Housing. I'm here today because Patty Gardner from the Pearl District Neighborhood Association is out of town. She wanted to come on our behalf for the appeal, but she couldn't, and so I'm here to read her letter into the record. This is from the Pearl District Planning and Transportation Committee. Dear City Council, the Pearl District Neighborhood Association met with the developers of this project multiple times to talk over the design direction of the project. In all of those meetings, we found the design team to be very responsive to our thoughts. They doubled the size of their project to maximize the existing FAR for low-income housing. They moved their play area to a safer location. They reworked their ground level to sensitively react to the adjacent streets, and they simplified their facade to become a more cohesive, unified project. We voted to support this project with no reservations in August. After all our discussions, we were dismayed to read the approval letter that incorporated conditions applied to the project by the Design Commission. Specifically, Condition C is very troubling to the PDNA. Condition C asks for redesign of the facade, not small changes, but big changes that majorly affect how the project looks. From a process point of view, the use of such a major condition is very troubling. First off, it is such a specific condition that it raises the question of who is the designer, the design commission, or the project architects. Secondly, it is a dangerous precedent to approve the building with such a major change without anyone seeing the final design to understand if it is even a good idea. No one, not the design commission or the public, will have seen the final result before it goes into permit and becomes irrevocable. This precedent undermines the design review process in regard to public participation. It also damages the relationship of the design commission to the design community. We urge you to strike Condition C from the approval letter and let this project move forward. Regards, Patricia Gardner, co-chair, Pearl District Neighborhood Association Planning and Transportation Committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Both. Thanks very much.
Thank you both for taking the time to come.
Thank you.
Anyone else on the to support the appeal? Okay. So then we'll turn to the opponents of the appeal, and obviously starting with, if there's someone here from the Design Commission, I think there was. Yes, there we are. So we'll hear from our Design Commissioner first, and then anyone else on that side of the debate. Welcome.
Mayor, Commissioners, my name is Jessica Molinar, and I am here to read a letter to you that was composed by the Design Commission this morning. Design Commission approved the Type 3 proposal for an affordable housing development at the intersection of Northwest 14th Avenue and Northwest Raleigh Street on September 22, 2016. The proposed design required several modifications to the development standards of Title 33, an exception to the city's encroachment standards, and several conditions of approval. This is an exceptional amount of peripheral activity for a relatively small project. It was driven by the applicant's stated need to move through the entitlements process as quickly as possible to not place land deal with Hoyt Street Properties at risk, and the Design Commission's desire to help the applicant succeed in both the short term, the development schedule and the development pro forma, and the long term, the mission and the urban design response. Throughout the Type 3 design review process, Bureau of Development Services staff and the design commissioners did as much as was within their power to fast-track the proposal, solve problems collaboratively and creatively, and did not create undue burden. It has been the intent of staff and the commissioners to help the applicant put a shovel in the ground as quickly as possible and to deliver a building that contributes appropriately to our city's urban fabric. Modifications and exceptions are typically granted if they better meet design review requirements. In this case, Commission recognized that some of the requested modifications and the exception did not better meet design review requirements, but would provide, number one, more housing due to the increased building height, and two, nominally larger housing units due to the increased floor area provided by the Orioles. And I won't read through all of the modifications. The approved exception to window projections in the right-of-way allows the applicant to construct unusually large Oriole windows to a lesser design standard. The city encroachment standards currently limit the maximum length of Orioles to 12 feet and require side windows on the projection. The exception extends the allowable length to 30 feet and eliminates the side window requirement. Large Orioles were not supported by the Design Commission and are expensive to build, but the applicant considered them necessary to achieving their architectural vision. Conditions are a tool used by Design Commission to strengthen a proposal's response to one or more guidelines and are typically made with the understanding and support of the applicant. Conditions are not uncommon, but a great number of conditions is generally an indication that a design has failed to satisfactorily address our city's design guidelines. I'm not going to read through all the guidelines. These guidelines address the spectrum of design issues from basic building functionality, B6, develop weather protection, to massing and scale, to character. It's significant that the proposal fell short across the width and breadth of its response to design guidelines. It's the Design Commission's decision that the proposed development does not need to be a model citizen, but it does need to demonstrate a willingness to participate in civic life. The proposal does not merit a less than even-handed application of our city's design guidelines. Residents of publicly supported affordable housing buildings deserve the same benefits all other Portland residents receive, to live in a building that doesn't stigmatize its residents and that is part of a vibrant, thoughtful, and deliberate urban infrastructure.
Thank you.
Actually, could you go into the design guidelines that the commission felt was not met?
So A4 used unifying elements. Do you want me to read the list?
Just the ones that this case turns on. Obviously, you had an iterative process on some other design elements of the project, like ground floor retail, where, if I understand this case correctly, you got to yes.
Yes.
But so the second Commissioner Fritz's request, the design criteria that you think support the Design Commission's recommended conditions versus what the applicant would prefer.
Oh, okay. It's specifically in regard to the
yeah.
the massing changes.
The massing issue, I mean, I, so.
Right. I think the two biggest issues were context and coherency. And that is ultimately why.
And I'm sorry, what was the last?
Context coherency. And coherency. Yeah, okay. So right out of the criteria.
Sure.
By the way, if I just may note, Mayor, this often gets lost in these kinds of hearings where so many issues have been resolved and we have a very narrow issue
yeah.
before us. But I made some notes, Commissioner, while you were speaking about strengthening designs around functionality, massing, scale, character. One thing that has struck me as I've been following the evolution of this project and the presentations from both sides is that taking out the narrow question before us today, I think the Design Commission has strengthened the design significantly.
Yeah.
So now I think we're left with just one piece. But as I and I'm not a skilled professional in this area, but looking at the evolution and the thing, I think the process that you've gone through has resulted in a better building. And this particular, while I haven't visited this site recently and therefore had nothing to disclose by way of ex parte, this is a very important site to me because I had a hand in the Fields, Ramona, and originally greenlit the Abigail. So it's in an area that I know well. And it's, I think, important that this design honor the space and the purpose of the building. Again, without prejudging this question, I think the Design Commission has helped to get a better building.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the process is working well. You're spending a lot of time on these cases. So
we are.
Appreciate volunteers doing that. Okay, other questions? Thank you very much. Any individual opponents of the appeal? Okay, then.
Chair, I have a motion.
All right.
And I move to grant the appeal and remove the conditions of approval.
Wait a minute. I think we have to give them. No, there's no. Is there any reason for a rebuttal still? Nope.
The record is complete.
All right. Record's complete. Sorry, go ahead.
So we need to, in this process, we need to put a marker down and then have a discussion. So I move we grant the appeal and remove the conditions of approval, C.1 and C.2.
Second.
Okay. Further discussion? Okay, I think we might be ready to vote on that motion. Tentative vote to be supported by findings at what time?
Well, so staff can speak more directly to the specifics, but at this time there is a 120-day waiver that has not been granted with a deadline looming.
Assuming, Mayor, we can get an agreement on that on the record?
Given that we're about to vote on it, is that all right with the applicant?
I see a nod.
Okay.
I see a little nods. Yes. Big nods. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
So then, just go ahead and close the record, and then you can.
All right, so we're going to close. We're going to close the record and take a vote on the motion, and then we'll set a date for findings after we see if we have a majority support for a motion.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let's proceed with acting on that motion, please.
Well, obviously, when you get into design, it is a matter of aesthetics and what's appealing to one person versus another. Most often, I defer to the Design Commission because I'm not an architect, nor do I play one on TV. On this particular one, thank you, Mission Commissioner. I always like to catch the jokes. On this particular one, there's partly the issue it's an affordable housing project, and that if it's just close, I mean, if it was an absolutely awful design, I would certainly support the Design Commission. But on this one, I do think that there's merit in both of them, and I do think that the findings about embellishing, identifying areas have the coherent corners, and especially when looking at the initial design to what you've come to, I think it does better match it. So I'm going to be very glad to support the appeal while also honouring the good work that the Design Commission is doing. Aye.
I don't have much to add to that because I, as I said earlier, I think the Design Commission did great work to get to the revised building design proposal. And now we're asked to choose between two visions that, to me, are very, very similar. If I had to just pick one based on my own aesthetics, I think the applicant's massing is actually more appealing than putting everything higher up, but I too generally defer to the design commission on these things. And the only reason that I'm going to make a rare exception in this case is because this does not, this is clearly not an objective measurement. This is subjective. And while I have great respect for the work that our volunteers have done, and I am grateful that they got us to this point, I'm persuaded that the applicant's proposed building design meets the applicable test. So I will support the appeal. Aye.
Councilman.
I appreciate the letter from the Design Commission. I appreciate the Design Commission's efforts, renewed efforts to go to great lengths to get projects done quickly, particularly affordable housing projects, as it is very critical, as we all know. And I do find, you know, just as a layperson, and I look at these two alternative designs, it's like, I don't know. They both look nice to me, but one has a cost difference. And so I will go with saving this project money and getting it done sooner and voting to support the appeal. Aye.
Yes.
Well, we do have a disagreement among friends here between those of us who don't play architects on TV and people who are actually professionals on the commission. But I agree with my colleague's statements here. I want to just make a couple of additional comments that are more in the way of reflections than necessity for this record. One, you know, I've served on the council for 14 years. Probably one of the biggest surprises is that in the last four, during a time of incredible growth in the city, we've had a very, very small number of design review cases at City Council. I mean, I think it's less than five. It's at least so few that I can't remember the last one before this one. And that, to me, is remarkable, and a remarkable testament to both the quality of our design review standards, the good staff work that's being done by the Bureau, and the good service that's being done by the Commission. One of the things I worry about is the fact that many of these projects are having three and four hearings, both for the fatigue of the commissioners and the time and cost to the applicants. But anyway, if the indicator of failure is lots of city council appeals, looks like we're doing okay. Secondly, one of the reasons I support this appeal is that I think one of the foundational assumptions about our design guidelines is that the first 30 feet of the building really matters a lot, and that's where the interest for the pedestrian needs to be. And I think the applicant did a good job of articulating the building in such a way, again, improved by the design commission process, especially about the retail spaces, so that the ground level presentation of this building to the community is a good one. And I appreciate the good work that's done by the applicant and their architect, and also by the commission. Finally, although I like Commissioner Novick, who's not here, I've always been a defender of the public right-of-way. If the oriole or bay window is up three or four stories up, as these are, I don't perceive an invasion of the right-of-way anywhere near like I would if it was obviously in the first or second story. So I don't think that there's any significant danger to the integrity of the right-of-way that's been created by this. So principal disagreement among people that are all doing great work. Aye.
Just before you gavel us out, I want to also thank you for working with the Neighborhood Association. That's certainly very compelling when you get such, obviously, that you've made changes in it in response to the neighborhood, as well as getting their goodwill. So thank you very much.
Yes, we're here. Okay, so the appeal is tentatively granted, and the findings will come back. Shouldn't be difficult to produce findings for this, I wouldn't think.
A couple weeks? Two or three weeks?
Is it possible to make this a final decision today?
Yeah, I don't know if we need... Yeah,
the findings right now reflect why the condition, why those criteria are not satisfied. So they need to be.
You need to change the condition findings.
So yeah.
Tim, you don't have anything over the next few days. You could.
You're trying to beat the storm on the mountain right now.
Yeah.
No, what we need to do, I briefly discussed with the applicant before the hearing. I don't know that they have their own attorney to rewrite the findings. That's something that we can do, but that's going to take us at least a couple weeks, obviously given the holiday. But given the decision of the commission, that doesn't affect the building permit issue. At least I'm certainly comfortable with that. But essentially, as we'd be looking for...
December 7th? That's the next Wednesday. That's the 2 weeks.
Two Wednesdays out? Yeah, that's reasonable, Warren. I think we can do that as a placeholder.
If staff's able to do that, yes, we can help with that.
But if they're on a schedule to proceed with the project, they could get foundation permits and proceed.
Excavation and shoring, there's permits that we can let go. And given the council's direction and the only appellant being the applicant, right, I don't think we'll see an appeal of council's direction.
It's not going up from here. Yeah. Okay. Thank you all.
Good. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
So okay. From the clerk, return December 7th, regular agenda.
Time certain.
That can be regular agenda.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's
pro forma. It's a pro forma matter in this case. So. Okay, thank you all very much. All right, let's move back to the remains of the day.